Welcome back to the Hollow Sky Podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Steven.
And Kyle.
It's Monday, Hollow Cult. So you know what that means. You've chosen us to hang out with you to talk about some weird stuff. We appreciate you for choosing us, making us part of your work week, and helping make that thing hopefully better than not. This week, I got another UFO case for you. I've been on the UFO kick, man. I know it's kind of a hot topic. It's kind of coming back in to the ether now with the Bugis sphere and all this stuff. But I've just been like chomping at the bit at some of these weird UFO cases.
It's good. That's a good topic, man.
Yeah, there's some weird ones.
You almost can just never go wrong with solid UFO stories.
Yeah, there's some strange ones out there. The more you dig into it, the more you're like, what is even going on?
It's because we're destined to throw hands with aliens.
I'm ready. And if I had to choose a third partner, I'd choose old boy from this exact story.
Good.
It's probably one of the most well-documented UFO cases that I've come across. Like, there are tons and tons of information. And I will probably be sharing some of that, some police reports and stuff, to the Patreon for the Patreon members. But we got to get through the business. So if you're new here, you're going to want to fast forward a little ways, like about 6 minutes, if you want to get to the crux of the story, because me and Kyle's got stuff to talk about. So yeah, welcome to the show. If you're not new here, you know the drill. So check us out at all our social medias, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Discord, Reddit. Search up the Hollow Sky Podcast. You'll find us there. Come and hang out. Be part of the community. Join the cult. It's cool. A lot of people have a good time. It's pretty fun, you know. Everybody's cool, and just be part of the cult. If you have a paranormal experience you'd like for us to feature on a future episode of our listener encounters that drop every other Thursday when we have time to record it, Kyle's got some info for you.
We do, and we want you to send over your stories to hollowskypodcast@gmail.com. We need your stories, and you need to share your stories. It's what this whole thing is about. Please don't hesitate. Write your story out in as much detail as you can. Send it over to us so the professionals can properly analyze your story.
Properly analyze.
Yeah. You don't want any of these other busters touching your gold.
No. Buster free. Since 2003, I mean 2019.
Yeah.
So if you'd like to support the show, this endeavor that we got going on, plenty of ways you can do it. We got a Patreon for $7 a month. You can get extra episodes that are not made to the public, just for the Patreon sect of the Hollow Cult. You get early drops to all of our episodes. You get them ad free. You get sweet casket breath jams. You get to listen to through your ear holes over there. You get early info on merch drops. Sometimes you get merch coupons, all kinds of good things. I don't know what you're thinking. Merch, what are you talking about? Hollowskypodcast.com. We got a store over there. We got shirts, hats, beanies, stickers, all kinds of cool stuff. You can go over there and rep the Hollow Cult to get you some Hollow swag. The best thing you can do, share the show word of mouth. It's free. Doesn't take much. We are greatly appreciative of it, and it helps the show grow. So just throw our name in the hat anywhere where people are talking about weird stuff, paranormal stuff, podcasts. Just keep the Hollow Cult growing. You can also go to wherever you listen to podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating and review. And if I find them, I will gladly shout you out. This week's 5-star rating and review comes to us from our friend LJ Skies. LJ says, Hollow Sky is simply the, but it's cut off because Apple won't let me read the whole title. I'm going to fill in the blank there. The best. Took liberties there, but I'm going to do it. LJ gives us 5 stars and says, having listened to every episode, I can say you guys are one of the best podcasts out there. The conversation is fun and lively. Research is well done and presented clearly. I look forward to every drop. Well, LJ, thanks for the kind words, and we look forward to you tuning in. So we are grateful anytime we get to hear good stuff like that, and you know, kind of get to know that we're having a positive effect on the Hollow Cult in people's lives. It's kind of nice.
Like I said, man, we ain't no busters.
Buster free since 2019. That needs to be a sticker.
That's what I was just thinking the same thing.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Maybe that'll be the next batch of free stickers that I hand out with the orders.
Buster free since 2019. Love it. Love it. That being said, take a minute to check out our friends in the podcast Sightings.
What is it about the supernatural that's captivated us for generations? Is it the mysterious allure of the unknown? The heart-pounding thrill of an unexplainable sighting? Or the creeping fear that a life-changing encounter could happen to you? Sightings is the new series that puts you at the center of the world's strangest unexplained events. From Roswell to Amityville to Loch Ness and beyond, each episode combines a never-before-heard story of an infamous supernatural encounter with mind-bending investigations that will leave you questioning what's real and what's impossible. Enter the unexplained with Sightings. Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right. For this particular episode, I started looking in to what many people call Canada's most investigated UFO incident, which, I mean, from what I can tell, it probably is. It's probably one of the most famous. It's almost like Canada's Roswell, because the incident was investigated by various Canadian authorities, including the Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
I was just going to make a joke about that. I'm so glad they did.
Okay, well, fucking make it.
No, I was just going to say, I hope there's a bunch of horses involved.
Yeah, it was the Mounties.
Those dudes that ride the horses.
Can you imagine being a UFO landing on Earth and then they chase you off on horses?
I would like to see that.
Yeah. It was also investigated by the Royal Canadian Air Force, the Department of Health, the Department of National Defense, and American authorities, including the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization and the United States Air Force. So it's no joke. A lot of people took it very seriously. The whole crux of the incident starts out with a man named Stephen Michalik. Michalik was a Polish military policeman who moved to Winnipeg, Canada shortly after World War II. He was an industrial mechanic at a concrete facility there. In his spare time, he was like a rock hound, like an amateur geologist. He loved to go out into the forest and like look for minerals and fossils and all kinds of stuff. And he would just go out on his weekends, trek around, look for stuff, just hang out, be in nature.
It's not a bad way to spend your free time.
No. And he was like an amateur prospector. So he had like claims set around the forests, like within so many miles of where he lived there in Winnipeg.
Dude, he's going to get rich.
Yeah. Always going out looking for quartz and silver and nickel and stuff. So he was trying to make a little scratch on the side, you know.
And you can never go wrong with a good side hustle.
Yeah. He'd stake some claims the prior year. And then on a particular long weekend in 1967, he went out to try to find some more. So during Victoria Day weekend, I'm not sure what Victoria Day is. So our Canadian friends, please let us know. I guess I could Google it, but who's got time for that, really?
Yeah.
Canadian Stephen Michalik of Winnipeg, mechanic by trade, decided to do some prospecting in Whiteshell Provincial Park. Mikalik was an amateur geologist and had been prospecting the area many times. Others had found several quartz veins near Falcon Lake that were associated with silver deposits. Mikalik had found himself in a few promising spots as he was out like milling around. So on May 19th, 1967, he traveled from Winnipeg to Falcon Lake, where he spent the night in a motel on the Trans-Canadian Highway. Mikalik left his motel at 5:30 in the morning and headed north into the forest of the park. At about 9 a.m., he'd found a nice quartz vein near a small stream. So he was there, focused, just chipping away at the rock. At about 11, he ate lunch and then continued to examine the quartz formation. At about 12:15 p.m., in the most Canadian thing I think I've ever heard, Mikalik's concentration was disturbed by the honking and cackling of some geese on a nearby lake.
I mean, very
Canadian, eh?
Hey.
So he's overlooking at the lake, seeing what's got these geese all in an uproar. And as he scans the forest, he notices what he describes as two red glowing cigar-shaped objects. This descending at a 40-degree angle, kind of coming down out of the sky.
Now you got to give props to the geese, man. They was giving him a heads up.
Yeah, they're like, you need to get the hell out of here.
They're real ones.
Yeah, they weren't hanging out.
Fuck no.
So as they got closer to him, he realized that they weren't necessarily cigar shaped, but they were more oval, like disc shaped, like classic flying saucer shaped. He watched as one of the objects stopped and hovered while the other descended and landed on a large flat rock about 160 feet away from him. After a few moments, the object still in the air departed. It changed from the bright red color to orange to gray as it flew away and disappeared behind some clouds. The object on the ground also turned from red to gray and finally got to the color of what he said was hot stainless steel, surrounded by a golden hue. So Mikalik, being a mechanic and a welder and stuff, when he went out to chip rocks, he wore his old welding goggles and he just flipped the lens up to where he'd have like some eye protection, right? As he's out there chipping rocks and stuff. He said it was so bright that he had to put his welders down to keep like his eyes from being damaged at how bright this actual UFO was. So he's sitting there looking at this thing that's landed on a rock 160 feet away from him, just kind of thinking like, huh, what's going on? He gets out his pad that he keeps with him, that he makes notes about like what rocks he found, where the veins are, how good they are and stuff. And he starts like making notes about whatever this craft is. He says it's making a hissing sound and a whirring noise, and it gave off a weird sulfurous smell. Then as he sat there, he started to draw it. And he sat for 30 minutes watching this thing, drawing, taking notes, which I thought was like, that's pretty hard ass, right?
Yeah, and incredibly significant, because you don't hear too many cases where that amount of time is spent observing this thing. You know, because I feel like minus the intent of abduction, these encounter cases are usually rather short.
Yeah. And this one's particularly weird because there's no contact with alien entities. There's no biological being seen. There's no alien seen. It's just solely a craft encounter, which I thought was also interesting considering how much attention was brought to it. Because even with like Roswell, you heard that they found bodies and they
oh yeah,
you know. So where was I? Oh, hissing sound and whirring noise, which is also interesting because a lot of times when you have close UFO encounters, there's not a lot of sound. You don't hear about anything with a lot of sound. Mikalik being an OG, like just a good old boy, he immediately started looking for identification marks, looked for like NASA logo, looked for US military logos, just started like trying to figure out what this thing is. And because it still, to his deathbed, he never bought onto the fact that this was extraterrestrial.
I was going to make that suggestion that's why homeboy stuck around, is because he didn't think it was, he thought it was our shit.
Yep, 100%. He claims to this day, well, he's dead, but to his deathbed, that he thought it was some sort of military experimental craft. So he is sketching this thing, looking at it. He starts to see, like, as he's looking at it and sketching it, he describes it as it's seamless. There's no windows from the side that he can see. There's no windows. There's no doors, no nothing. He said it looked like it was carved out of one solid block of whatever this metal material is. He can't see anything. So as he's writing, he looks up, and then the craft almost looks like it starts to morph, and a door starts to form in the side of the UFO. And so he's like, okay. Like if this is secret technology, this shit's pretty high up there, right? So he approaches it. As he goes up to it, the door opens and there's three panels in front of the entrance that open up. And he says as soon as it opens up, he hears human voices inside. Two of them talking back and forth, but he couldn't make out what they were saying. So I feel like that's pretty notable in this particular UFO incident.
Right? Oh, yeah.
So Mikalik being Mikalik, he starts to call out to him. He immediately thinks that they're having trouble with their craft. So he calls out to him. He goes, hey, Yankee boys, if you guys need any help, I can help you get your craft going, get you off the ground.
Who the fuck is this guy?
Dude, OG.
Dude, World War II, bro. This is not an 80-year-old woman on the side of the road with her car overheating.
Dude, he's no joke. I think he just thought he was doing his military duty. You know, he's like, if these military boys are down, we're going to get them back up and going. Well,
that is pretty gangster.
They didn't respond in English, so he went on to say the same thing in Russian, German, Italian, French, Ukrainian, and then English again.
This guy's not real.
Dude, he, like I said, World War II soldiers were built different.
I'm saying.
And he still got no response at all. So as he's up there, the door had opened up and he pokes his head inside to look in. He doesn't see any people, which caught him off guard because he clearly heard people talking. He said all he saw was a maze of lights and panels and beams of lights and all sorts of diagonal patterns and clusters of lights flashing in random sequences, almost like a computer panel, right? With all kinds of buttons and shit going on. And as he looked in there, he didn't see anyone, so he pulled his head back out. And as soon as he pulled his head out of the craft, the three panels closed back up. And the door morphed back into the surface of the object. So he's like, what in the hell is going on? So he has welding gloves on that he took with him to chip rocks to protect his hands. He touches the surface of the craft, and like welding gloves are pretty well made to handle heat. And he said as soon as he touched it, the gloves on his fingertips started to burn. So whatever it was an insanely high temperature, but not high enough for it to deflect any heat toward him as he had stuck his head in the craft. The actual surface temperature was so high that it started to burn his gloves, which is crazy.
Yeah, you would think that if it was that hot, he'd
feel it,
you know, with just radiating off of it.
Yes. Yes. So as he touched it and pulled his hand back, the craft responded to it. It immediately, as soon as he pulled his hand back, it lifted off the ground, turned counterclockwise. And as it moved, he noticed that on the back side, what looked to him like an exhaust vent was there. It was just a series of little holes in the back of this craft. He said it was about 9 inches high by 6 inches wide and contained a uniform pattern of round holes, each about 1/16th of an inch in diameter. As this thing turned and aimed itself at him, a blast of hot gas shot out from these holes and into his chest, setting his shirt on fire, his undershirt on fire, his hat on fire, and causing him severe pain. He tore off his burning clothes and threw them to the ground. As he focused his attention back on the craft, it had already made its way up into the sky and shot off and disappeared. So we have actual physical evidence that this happened now, because he has his burning shirt, burning hat, burnt gloves, also noticeable burns on his body.
Do you think it burnt him on purpose, or it was just a byproduct of them getting out of there?
I don't know. The fact that it turned directly to him made me wonder if it was some sort of defense mechanism.
Yeah.
Because it was,
I would argue that even the structuring of the surface of the craft was a defense mechanism.
With the heat and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Maybe it's just the properties of whatever material, but it does kind of feel defensey.
Yeah.
So, you know, because it also clammed up whenever he started talking to it.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what I was thinking.
All too. Signs point to somehow, which is rare in itself, somehow they didn't know he was in the vicinity, get surprised by him, and they're like, oh shit.
Whoops.
Yeah, we messed up.
Yeah.
But it is even weirder that he heard English speaking people.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. Like that is bizarre. Is bizarre. So after the object was gone, Michaela started to notice a strong odor of burning electrical insulation, along with a sulfurous smell that he had not noticed earlier. Moss on the ground underneath where this craft was also on fire and burning, which could have been from where he tore his shirt off and threw it on the ground. The spot where the object had landed looked as if it had been swept clean, but piled up in a 15-foot circle was a collection of pine needles, dirt, and leaves, almost like the air from this thing taken off had just blown everything from around where it had landed. As he looked around, he started to get sick. He developed a severe headache, became nauseous, broke out in a cold sweat. His nausea became worse and worse. Soon he started throwing up. So he decided to go back to his little camp he had set up, gather his tools, and try to get back to his hotel. So he started to make his way out of the woods. As he's walking along the road, he sees a Royal Canadian Mounted Police officer driving through, and he flags him down. So I'm going to go here and pull up this police report from an officer. I can't remember his name. Let me look. G.A. Salotki. So this is the actual police report that was filed the day of. It says, at approximately 3 p.m. on this date, I was patrolling Highway 1, 1/2 mile west of Falcon Beach, Manitoba, when I noticed a man walking on the south shoulder of the highway toward Falcon Beach. He was wearing a gray cap, brown jacket with no shirt, light-colored trousers, and carrying a brown knapsack or briefcase. The subject, upon seeing the police car, began to wave his arms excitedly. I turned around on the highway and drove back to see what he wanted. He shouted to me to stay away from him. I asked him why, and he replied that he'd seen two spaceships. He said, I might get some sort of skin disease or radiation if I came too close. He seemed very upset. I asked for some identification, and he gave me a document pertaining to prospecting, which showed his name as Stephen Michalik of 314 Lindsay Street in Winnipeg, Manitoba. I inquired as to the circumstances surrounding his unusual experience, and Mr. Michalik related the following story. He apparently had been prospecting approximately 1 mile west and 2 miles north of Falcon Beach. At about 12 noon, he sighted two spaceships. He said they were rotating at a high rate of speed and emitted a red glow. The spaceships landed near him, and he reportedly touched one. The exhaust or some sort of hot substance came off the spaceship, burning his shirt, his chest, and his hat. The spaceship remained a while, how long was not certain, and then flew away. He left the bush to get medical treatment. Michalik showed me his cap, the back of which was burnt. I wanted to examine his shirt, however, he would not let me, and kept backing away every time I got close to him. As far as I was able to determine, the back of Michalik's head was not burnt. It appeared to me that Michalik had taken a black substance, possibly wood ashes, and rubbed it on his chest. At no time during my conversations with Michalik would he allow me close enough to him to definitely see whether or not he was injured. I asked him why his hands were not burnt if he had touched the spaceship, and he would not answer me. At my request, he drew a diagram of the spaceship, which appeared to be a saucer shape. I could not smell the odor of alcohol on Michalik. His general appearance was not dissimilar to that of a person who had overindulged. His eyes were bloodshot. When questioned in detail, could or would not answer coherently. I offered to drive him to Falcon Beach and arrange for someone to treat him, but he declined, saying that he was all right. Approximately 1/2 hour later, he came to the detachment office and asked for me. He would not enter the office, so I spoke to him outside. He wished to know where a doctor would be located. I told him nearest would be in Kenora, Ontario, or Steinbach, Manitoba. He requested strongly that I do not tell anyone what had happened to him, as he didn't want any publicity. Michalik said he was going to catch the 8:10 bus back to Winnipeg. He left, and I later saw him sitting near Falcon Beach Hotel on Highway 1 awaiting the bus. The information supplied by Michalik is of necessity vague due to his reluctance to cooperate. This reluctance on his part may have been intentional or due to circumstances beyond his control. So that was the initial police report.
I am going to call bullshit.
Knew it.
100% bullshit. The whole thing from both parties. Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. I think the whole thing is set up. Yeah, so I think the police officer's lying, and dude's lying.
What, like, dude's lying about the spaceship?
No.
Oh.
I think he got to, because you said on his deathbed, he is under no circumstance in belief that this is a UFO.
Yeah.
And yet he tells the cop, I
spaceships
found a spaceship.
Yeah. I noticed
that. And then on top of that, he knows something that we don't know, because he's awfully goddamn adamant of not letting dude touch him for some reason.
Yeah.
Or investigate his wounds. He's acting like this paranoia state, and maybe it is like a PTSD situation. I don't know, but it definitely feels weird.
Yeah.
And then judging by what the, and he also states, don't tell anyone. I don't want any publicity. It suggests to me that there's only a handful of reasons I could think of why you wouldn't want that to happen. You wouldn't want people to think you're crazy. You wouldn't want, because you said he served.
Yep.
You wouldn't want the military to think you're crazy. However, it wouldn't really matter if you're out of the military. That's null and void at that point. Or you have some type of insight of what could possibly happen if you did just start blowing the whistle.
Yeah.
And then remind me again, it slipped my mind. At the end of the police report, what did the police, the officer say? There was something in there that triggered me.
Oh, dang it. I closed it.
That made me think the officer might be in on some shenanigans too.
Let me pull it back.
I can't remember exactly what you said, but there was something that triggered my mind where I'm like, well, this motherfucker makes it sound like he knows a little bit more than he's letting on.
Here's the last thing that he said. The information supplied by Mikhailik is of necessity vague due to his reluctance to cooperate. This reluctance on his part may have been intentional or due to circumstances beyond his control.
Right there. What's that mean? Circumstances beyond his control. What is that implication? Because that makes it sound like to me the cop is already under the influence that dude is being pressed.
Yeah. Unless he was talking about like maybe him being drunk.
Maybe.
Could that be circumstances beyond control?
Maybe.
Because he clearly said, he's like, yeah, he's acting like he was under the influence, but
there's no,
I couldn't like, smell him
yeah.
under the influence.
Yeah. So maybe that's it.
Could be either just, or.
It's very interesting wording, though.
Yeah. In his description of the crafts, which I didn't have in that particular little part there, but I did find it, he said the objects had domes on them and were about 40 feet in diameter.
So it seems like a classic UFO shape through and through.
Yes. He said they'd kept, when they were flying, they'd kept about four diameters apart from one another, like four UFOs apart. They didn't get real close to one another. He also said that they were 8 feet high and the domes extended another 3 feet over top. So they were pretty good size craft, like big enough for humans to be in them.
What did he served in World War II, right?
Yeah.
Because your description reminds me a lot of the Bell.
Yeah, I think like I'll show you a picture that he drew of the craft. It's very, very much so what a flying saucer would look like in the time period.
But you know what I'm getting at? It reminds me a lot, at least the visual that I'm being painted reminds me a lot of the Nazi UFO.
Oh, yeah.
That they dubbed the Bell.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think didn't they call it the Bell? I don't know. Whatever.
The time travel. There's a name for it. I can't remember the exact name. He also noticed that the craft's walls were about 20 inch thick and were honeycombed, which I thought was interesting too. It sounds very much like military-esque craft.
20 inch thick. It's pretty hefty.
Yeah, that's pretty thick. Pretty thick.
Yeah.
So, but
it's also such a weird observation. Like, I don't know the guy personally, but he has a lot of weird observations.
Yeah.
The things that you would recall, the three panel door, the walls being 20 inches thick. I don't think many people really process that.
No, I think you hit the nail on the head though. Whenever you said that he never exactly like bought into the fact that it was alien.
Yeah.
Right. Like he did say spaceship, but I think he lacked any other term to really describe it to the police officer, you know?
Yeah.
Because there, if you, you can find it on YouTube. There is a Unsolved Mysteries, OG Unsolved Mysteries did an episode on this in season 3 and they have actual interviews with him. Like you can tell, I think he's from Poland. His English isn't very good.
Yeah.
In his interviews. And I think he was probably just trying to get it across to the police officer the best he could.
So, you think so?
I think so.
I don't know. I kind of feel like dude knows more than he's letting on.
He may.
Because it's just a weird thing to use the word spaceship.
Yeah.
If you don't believe in the possibility of, especially for the time.
Yeah.
right? Like, I don't feel like, spaceship was used very often back then.
Which I remind me to touch on that, because I kind of started thinking about the UFO phenomena as a whole and how it evolves with humans. And I went on this weird thought path late last night and tried to like make notes about it and kind of get my thought together.
Cause the only, like, even, and I could be wrong, I don't remember many talks of UFOs during World War II, minus the Foo Fighter situations. Right. But as far as I can remember, Foo Fighters were more described as glowing balls.
Yeah, but this is post Roswell. So everything at this time period now is very flying saucer-esque.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's the big, that's gotcha. Like at that time period, whenever you heard UFO, you immediately thought classic UFO.
But everybody strongly associated that with Alien.
Yes. Yes.
I think so. If dude doesn't know more than he's letting on, I think this, here's the confusion. I think his gut tells him this is not from this planet. But what fucks him up are the voices.
Yeah.
And so his brain rationalizes it as there's no possible way this can be extraterrestrial because I heard a familiar language to me.
Voices. Which opens a whole can of worms there.
It does. There could be a lot going on there. There's a lot of different avenues because we don't have evidence to actually pinpoint an explanation.
Yeah.
But I think it is what something any of us would do in that circumstance, where in your heart of hearts, in your mind, you know that this isn't from here, but you hear human voices, which then you will force your brain to rationalize what you saw wasn't, you know, it wasn't extraterrestrial. It was human.
Yep.
And to me, does that mean that it wasn't extraterrestrial? No. That could have been a mechanism to help him sleep better at night at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because most people aren't going to want to acknowledge the fact that this could be from another planet.
No. And I think you hit the nail on the head. Cause if I put myself in his shoes and I watch this thing land, right. And I'm sitting there, I'm watching it for 30 minutes, sketch it. Like I do my due diligence as a paranormal investigator. You know, I don't tuck tail and run away. I'm making as many notes as I can. Finally get the gall to go up to it, and that door opens and I hear people talking inside. That's going to throw everything I'm thinking of off.
Oh, 100%.
And it's going to open up avenues. Like it will fuck your brain.
Yeah. It'll fuck your brain all up. But I argue that it is alien because that technology would be so far advanced for the time period.
Yeah. And
could I see that technology today? Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah.
Back in 1947, from us?
67.
67, whatever, from us? No. I don't see that happening.
Yeah.
Because, like, you have to look at it. I get that there is a military aspect to it, but there are so many benefits that a government would have. And having that type of technology, I highly doubt that it stays hidden for 2025.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because not only does it have a massive military application, but it also has a crazy commercial application where these guys could have made money hand over fucking fist. Yeah. Not to mention, you want to talk about greed to the fullest extent, you could have fucking millionaires out there trying to colonize planets, mining planets, creating a stronghold in the goddamn galaxy.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are people on the planet that would have every fucking reason to 150% invest in that technology and those materials for a plethora of reasons. So to keep that hidden from 67 bare minimum to 2025 doesn't make sense to me.
No.
And because you know, dude, I mean, you know, at some point a country with that technology is going to flex it eventually.
Yeah. And if you want to go even a step beyond that, maybe it has nothing to do with humans from now. What if they're
exactly
from the future?
Exactly. You
know, still not extraterrestrial. Or
it's humans fucking from alien, though.
Yeah, or humans from another dimension. Like, just
definitely still right alien. Over,
which is like the implications of like hearing the human voices, which could also lead back to like what Max Spears was saying. Like, all this 99% of this shit is human military.
Yeah, and then you could step back. Dude, it could have been his fucking brain rationalizing shit.
Yeah. And to go further, like with the alien apathy and shit, he said that he didn't want the police officer making a stink about it because he didn't want anyone finding his nickel veins. He didn't want a bunch of people up there, you know, searching around looking for UFO pieces because he was afraid some other prospect was going to go up there and take the minerals that he found on that spot.
No, they're probably going to go looking for UFOs.
Yeah.
But that was I can tell you right now, 9.9 out of 10 times, I don't know what the fuck a nickel vein looks like.
Me either.
Nor do I give a shit.
Especially when
I'm looking for UFO. If I'm going for a UFO, I'm looking for a UFO. I'm not looking for some crazy mineral deposit. I don't even have the knowledge to know what it looks like, let alone mine it.
But I think that also kind of leads to like how like salt of the earth this old boy is.
Oh yeah.
You know, like he's worried about his git, you know, like, hey.
I don't blame him there, but
sure, I just got set on fire by a UFO, but I don't want anybody up there rooting around.
Yeah.
Right? Keep your hands out of my cookie jar, right? So, where was I? Here he goes back to his motel, calls his wife. First, he enters the motel after he talked to the doctor or after he talked to the police officer, goes into the coffee shop and he's asking again, where can I find a doctor? Again, told him the nearest doctor was about 45 miles away. Goes back to his hotel room, calls his wife, says, hey, don't worry. There's been an accident. Can you send our boy to meet me at the bus terminal to pick me up? Hops on the bus and goes back to Winnipeg, where when his son picks him up, he notices that his dad is in pretty rough fucking shape. He's got burns on his body. He's noticeably sick and they take him to the hospital where he is treated for a severe headache and nausea and also treated for the curious grid burn marks that are on his chest in the grid pattern. Also like there's pictures of him with the grid burns on him. It's strange because there is the phenomenon known as the grid pattern that shows up on people, not necessarily related to aliens, but people will wake up one day and have these grid shaped bruises on them. Everett actually had some, where were we? We were at Kyle Louder's diaper party and he goes to get in the pool and he has a perfect grid shaped pattern on his back. I think I still have pictures of it, but as I was looking into it, It's a legit phenomenon that's happening to people and they can't explain why. That could be a whole episode by itself. Anyway. So.
But these were burn, like a grid burn pattern.
Yes. These were burns.
And Was he that close to the UFO when it took off?
Yeah, I mean, it was hot enough that it set his shirt on fire. So,
the point I'm trying to make is for the heat to come out of the grid like that would have to be focused energy at that point.
Yeah.
Right. Because if it was heat coming out, you would think that it would have a general burn across his body, not a grid pattern burn.
Yeah.
Because a grid pattern burn would make me think of like a focused laser coming out and hitting you.
I think
you're laying on a grate.
It was from the exhaust.
I get that.
A circular grid.
Yeah. I know. I'm getting that. Like you're talking like a hole, yeah, right? Yeah. But what I'm saying is like, as that heat would come out, it would dissipate and create a massive burn across his chest, not little bitty hole burns.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? He was fairly close because he
I would think like, you'd have to be really close for that.
Yeah, it was at the same time like he was touching the craft that it started to
react. Okay. Yeah.
So he goes to the hospital, gets taken care of, and then when he gets back home, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police officers come back and investigate again. There's a whole nother police file that I won't read. It's like
please
5 pages
long. Please
tell
me Men in Black on horseback.
I hope so. But
me too.
It was just the regular OG Mounties.
Maybe they have Men in Red up there.
they do. Just carrying maple syrup and shit.
Fucking awesome.
They come in and start to interview him, but there is already a guy from whatever that, the APRO, the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization, is already there at the same time interviewing him. This is just 2 days later. The RCMP investigators who were there and checking out his clothes or his burns tried to make the case that he had burnt himself on a barbecue grill. However, okay. The burn pattern was the opposite of what it would have been if he would have been burnt on a barbecue grill. They state that there were manned fire towers nearby, but the lookouts reportedly saw nothing that day. What else did we have?
That's weird.
No radar picked up on anything that day. So it was strange. So this is 2 days after the event where they are back and getting, you know, checking him out. They also said at the hospital, the burns on his abdomen were diagnosed as superficial. So like a severe sunburn. He returned home where he continued to complain of nausea, headache, an offensive odor from his lungs, lack of appetite, and rapid weight loss. He said he lost 22 pounds in the first 7 days.
And nobody tested for radiation?
They did. 2 days after the alleged event, Mr. A was attended by a personal physician whom he had not visited since the spring earlier that year. The following day, he was taken to Hospital Y, a different hospital, for a second opinion to be checked for radiation trauma by the hospital's Department of Nuclear Medicine. A radiation pathologist found no evidence of the effects of radiation on the burned area in his blood or on his clothing. He reported that the burn was thermal. A week after the sighting, Mr. A was checked in the whole body radiation counter at an atomic power installation. This counter detected measures of gamma radiation from isotopes in his body. While the test did show positive, it was no count that was above normal background. So it was within normal, measures there. Said he lost a total of 22 pounds over the next 7 days, but had regained some of his strength and some of his weight 11 days later. Let me think what else I was going to touch on here. His son, Stan Michalek, has written a book that was published not too long ago, probably within the last 10 or 15 years, called When They Appeared. And this was talking about essentially all of the press and the people that came out of the woodwork once his dad had told his story. And he tells it from his point of view as like a teenage kid. And he said it was so bad, like watching his dad deteriorate that first week. Like his Stan wasn't a very big guy anyway. So losing 22 pounds was significant. He said, I thought my dad was going to die. Right. And he said the smell emanating from the room was just like unbearable. It was like sulfur and just gross. And I guess it was coming either from Stan's body or from inside Stan because Steven. And because Steven said whatever had happened to him had completely fucked up his taste and his smell. So whatever was happening has happened from the inside out, because he kept talking about like when he breathed out how bad it would smell.
So bizarre.
Yeah.
I don't even have the first clues to what would cause that. Outside of like a radiation situation.
Unless it was something from that exhaust that hit him, maybe? Could it have burned it him that bad?
Could be. It could be that he inhaled a bunch of shit and it fucked him up.
Yeah. So not long after that, they had went to investigate the actual scene. He finally gave in and was like, yeah, let's go. I'll take some of you guys to the site where it had happened. At first, he was real leery about it, kept wanting to like not lead them exactly to where the UFO was. But when they finally got there, they started doing some investigation. It did read of radiation levels there, higher than normal. But they said no more so than like was found in industrial-based paints at the time. Some of the paints were radioactive, and they had some like glowing watches, watch with glowing faces. That's radioactive. And they said it's no higher than that. So it really shouldn't affect the human body the way Steven's body was affected. They also did find various bits of metal wedged into the rock outcroppings there that they pulled up and received or brought as evidence, which also tested positive for some radiation, which I thought was interesting. A few years later, fast forward, Michalik's rash came back. These burns showed back up on his body, which I thought was weird. What else do I got here?
It's like one of two things there. I mean, he either had another encounter with the fuckers, or there's something dormant in his body.
Yeah.
That can be triggered, whether it's in his blood or what?
Yep. There were actual accounts of people seeing crafts that day, which a lot of the police reports and stuff just stuck to the fire watch towers. The fire watch towers didn't see anything. There were nothing on radar, but there were kids fishing on a nearby lake that said they saw two crafts at the same time, which I found interesting. And there was one other. There was a man on a golf course that wasn't too far away that also reported seeing two strange craft in the sky.
It's not surprising. You have official people being like, yeah, we saw something. And then you have official .gov employees going, no, we didn't see nothing.
Yeah.
Because I would assume the fire watch is probably considered like a government job or something to that nature, you know?
Yep. Especially being interviewed by like the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the Canadian Air Force, the US Air Force. They're going to be like, no, I don't think we saw anything at all.
See, also interesting that the United States Air Force gets involved in it.
Yeah. Which if it was nothing, I don't feel like they ain't showing up. No, because that's
showing up.
That turns it to international stuff.
Yeah, they ain't showing up for nothing.
Unless it was a U.S. craft.
I mean, maybe. Either way, they got an interest in, there's something abnormal going on in this, the whole situation.
Yes. Yes. Claimed visit to the site by Michalik and another associate a year after the alleged sighting, at which time they discovered massive pieces of radioactive material in a fissure of the rock within the landing circle. This material reportedly consists of two W-shaped metal bars, each 4.5 inches long, and several similar pieces of irregular shapes. These items were said to have been found about 2 inches in below a layer of lichen in the rock fissures. They were later analyzed as pure silver. The result of the analysis of these pieces of metal were sent to the Colorado Project. The analysis report showed two fragments, each consisted of central massive metal portion, which was not radioactive. One of these was 93%. The other was 96% silver. Both contained copper and cadmium. And the composition similar to that found in commercial available sterling silver or silver sheets. The metal was coated with a tightly adhered layer of quartz sand, similar to that used in foundry sand. This was also not radioactive. Radioactivity was contained in a loose adhering layer of fine grained materials containing uranium. This layer could be removed readily by washing and brushing. The minerals were uranophane and thorium-free pitch blend, characteristically found in vein deposits. So while the pieces recovered were radioactive, just not very radioactive. Where are we at? Almost time. So in his son Stan's book, he talks a lot about how much his life and his dad's life was flipped upside down once everybody started investigating it and the public came in and started showing up at their house every day. And he said to his deathbed, Stephen wished he would not have said anything. He wished he wouldn't have said anything to the cop. Wished he wouldn't have said anything to anyone, because he said being a military policeman, he was very set on like being honest and being forward, like putting the facts of what he saw out. So when he was asked by another officer, he didn't want to lie. So he told it, but he said if he could change anything, he wouldn't say anything to anybody, because it made their lives so bad because they were constantly ridiculed. He goes on to say like, my dad didn't make any money off of it. You know, once he got better, he went back to the concrete plant, worked. And he said again to his deathbed, he still believed that it wasn't extraterrestrial in nature. He still fully believed that it was some sort of experimental military craft.
I think that's just what he tells himself.
I do too. First I think plan. He's trying to stay grounded.
Yeah.
Like just trying to,
I think it's a twofold. I think that's what he tells himself. And he won't even acknowledge the other possibility because he didn't want to, you know, push forward more attention that he didn't want to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah. But as I'd said earlier, this made me think about the UFO phenomena as a whole, like how it changes and morphs over time with human intelligence and human consciousness. Because if you look at like weird encounters from say like the Incans and the Mayans, how they depicted them, it was always as like a star or a sun. It was something that they could understand in their terms, right?
Yeah.
And then you look at like early Christianity sightings. Again, a lot to do with stars and stuff, but a lot of it had to do with it being religious in nature. A lot of times they would see the Virgin Mary, or they would see Jesus, or like you had the star that led the three wise men to Jesus. Like all of this stuff was very much per the time period, which I think is interesting. Then you get to like these particular cases post Roswell. Every UFO case essentially is all flying saucer. It's all disc shape. It's all flying saucer. Like when he looked in there, the way he described it was very much how you would see a flying saucer in a 1950 sci-fi movie. The door opens and it's panels and it's computers and shit, which I think is weird that it matches up with the timeline, because now nobody's seeing fucking flying saucers anymore. People are seeing orbs. People are seeing drones. People are seeing the jellyfish thing. Like all, like it's so weird that it evolved. Oh, yeah,
and the cigar shape was a big one for a while.
Yes. Oh, and that's another point. Like in the early 1800s, in the 1880s, the 1900s, nobody saw a fucking flying saucer. All they saw were airships, like essentially floating balloons, which was the only thing, because airplanes hadn't been created by then. It was the only thing that they could like conjure up, like what could possibly be in the sky? Oh, it has to be a balloon. It's weird that the phenomena evolves with the time period and the people's the people of that time period's ability to put it into context that they can understand. And like part of me is like, okay, so is the phenomena evolving with the people? And I think that's horseshit. I think the phenomenon's so far advanced that it's like manipulating the way that we understand it, the way that we interact with it.
No, I think it comes right out of the law of one. Because in the law of one, the extraterrestrial there tries to make contact with the human race several times. If I remember correctly, it chooses a form that is most acceptable. So what if it's not about evolving with the people? What if it's about, like you said, the balloon is what they knew at the time. So for them, that it's the easiest to rationalize. Oh, this is familiar. Okay, this isn't so bad. You know what I'm saying? Like maybe it has to do with the familiarity and comfort. Like if they are, like a screen memory. Now, could that be nefarious in nature? Absolutely. It could also be, you know, benevolent in the regards of maybe they're just trying to make contact. Maybe they're seeing if we're ready for contact.
Which also leads credence to why they had such a religious context. Because if you look back at like the 13, 1400s in Christianity, like most people of religion were, for lack of a better term, they were smart. So they knew how to write. They knew how to read. So what better way to get this documented than to show itself as something with a religious context, because those people are immediately going to write it down. They're immediately going to paint it. They're immediately going to draw it, you know? So I thought that like, that is very, very focused and like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like they very much meant to do that, which I find is crazy.
Yeah. I think you kind of have it right. I think it's just, it's just them appearing as something that can be perceived to the classification of people that are there, you know, because I also think, like you're saying about the star way back in the day, what the fuck are people going to describe that's bright in the sky outside a star?
Exactly.
Fuck all. There's nothing. So and like you said, the extraterrestrial intelligence should be so far superior that they would already know this.
Yep. And I feel like
it's very crazy. It has terrifying connotations to it, because it would suggest that either they're instantly that smart to our culture and our consciousness and our way of thinking and our knowledge, or the assholes have been watching us for a long time and monitoring progress.
I think it's very much a case by case consciousness scenario. Cause I will forever refer back to the Our Lady of Fatima mass sighting.
Yeah.
Because you had thousands and thousands of people there during this sighting. some people saw the Virgin Mary. Now, keep in mind, everybody's looking at the exact same fucking spot in the sky. Some people saw the Virgin Mary. Some people saw a second sun. Some people saw a fucking UFO. Some people didn't see shit. How does that happen? Unless it's case by case manipulating humans.
Yeah, which is kind of like in the Rendlesham Forest encounter, where there are people that believe that particular UFO encounter manipulated reality. It was real, but it wasn't real.
Isn't that?
Because it had that much power that the way I understand it is it manipulated. So if you and me were there, it manipulated the way we saw reality in that place, in that moment. So on one hand, what was taking place there was not real. However, it was real because it manipulated like burn marks on the trees and shit.
Which is bonkers.
It's hard to like, it's like, I feel like I'm not even choosing the right words to properly describe that because it's so complex. And I'm sure there's some people that are going to hear this and go, you're dumb.
It is a theory that's been pushed a lot.
And it's not that far fetched, like, because as humans, we've made some pretty fascinating advancements in life. Right? Like the fact that there are people out there that are consciously trying or have done tapping into human consciousness as like a Wi-Fi stream. To me, that's fucking crazy.
Scary.
And that's what we could do. So you amplify that by 100,000 years, 500,000 years, a million years on top of where we're at. You very well could have the ability to manipulate reality. And in my opinion, you could very easily have the ability to prove the existence of God.
Oh, yeah. Which is, if that gets weaponized, that's bad.
Yeah. I think that there is an effort out there to prove the existence of ethereal beings, whether that be God or that be pastor or that be whomever, a supreme power. Because we are of that subspecies of existence that craves power.
Yeah. We like,
and if we could come into contact with a fucking supreme being,
we're special.
Holy shit. I wouldn't even go that far. I think there would be people that would just try to manipulate it or control it to a degree, benefit from it, you know, which in fact we have throughout time because of people doing rituals and shit like that. But it goes off into a much broader subject at this point. But I think it's out there, man. I truly do. And I don't understand why anyone would see it any other way.
Dude, and like the reality manipulation, like that's worse than conscious manipulation. I feel like, or conscience manipulation.
Oh yeah.
Because there was a case in Carla Turner's book that I'd referenced before where a guy is at his house and he's got two gals staying over and they're in the upstairs bedroom. He's downstairs and he gets woken up by one of the women yelling. And as he wakes up, he can clearly hear like a helicopter in the background. He sees the lights coming through his windows and shit. And he's like, what in the fuck is going on? But as he makes it up into the room, one of the women are cowering over in the bed and The other one is laying on the bed and she's being levitated up out of the bed. And he can't see what's going on, but he says, like, the walls of the room dissipate as she's getting pulled through the ceiling, getting essentially abducted.
Which is manipulating reality.
Which is manipulating reality. Which makes you question, what is our reality?
Yeah. And I feel like the manipulation of consciousness is almost like the classic Constantine devil and God's wager. I feel like the manipulation of consciousness is more of suggestion. It's like a heavy persuasion. The manipulation of consciousness, they're persuading you to buy into this new artist because everyone around you is buying into the artist. They're persuading you to go try out the new Mountain Dew because everyone around you is trying the new. And whereas manipulating reality is that. I mean, it is.
You don't have a choice.
You don't have a fucking choice. I feel like consciousness manipulation, I feel like there's a chance to overcome it. But as far as the actual manipulation of reality, you're fucked. It's unavoidable. Which because literally, like you were saying, the walls in your house are dissipating for 5 seconds to allow you to pass through.
Yeah, like is this only as real as we perceive it to be? You know, like if something were to get into our brains and I guess it don't even have to does it have to do with like the way we perceive it? Like, can they manipulate that too? Because that's kind of what Tom DeLonge was pushing. Like, it all has to do with our consciousness, right? Like, if we consciously think that this doesn't exist, does it stop existing?
I don't know. That one for me is kind of hard.
Makes my brain hurt.
It does make my brain hurt.
Because if you can get into something that can essentially, like, our reality is what we make it, is how we perceive it. If something can get into your brain to change the way that you perceive your reality, they're in control at that point because everything changes.
Nothing is real at that point.
Yeah. Or everything is real. Like that sucks.
Yeah.
Just don't do that. Aliens, powers that be, government agencies, stop it.
Yeah, I agree.
But that was a good tangent that we went on there. That was a hollow sky deep cut. I'm not sure where we landed, but hopefully we got you thinking.
We landed about where we started.
Yeah, not knowing shit.
Exactly.
I was hoping that would stir up some conversation. Again, as far as UFO cases go, like there weren't any aliens or anything, but it was interesting. He did turn over all of his evidence, his burned shirt and his gloves, his hat in there. They are on display at some university in Manitoba, I think. So you can go and see them.
Well, I mean, I'm just gonna throw it. I definitely don't believe it was an alien. However, here's the shirt that I got burned by humans.
Take my alien shirt. I think he was just trying to make himself feel better.
That's 100% where I'm at.
Because, like,
there's no fucking way. If you thought that was humans that burn your shirt, you're gonna throw your fucking shirt away.
Dude, there's so much. Like the Black Vault they released as much information as they can find. There's news articles, there's all kinds of transcripts from him being interviewed and all kinds of stuff. Again, look up the Unsolved Mysteries episode. I think season three episode. I don't know. Just look up the Falcon Lake incident, Unsolved Mysteries, and you can watch him talk. He's just a good old boy. Like, there's pictures of him with his welding goggles on, like in the newspaper and all kinds of shit. But I don't think I ever saw where he had been like put under hypnosis or anything. I don't recall like him ever mentioning any missing time. I don't know if that's also part of him like blocking out, like not wanting to accept that this was an actual alien encounter.
Could be.
So, yeah, that's it. That's it for today. Hope you guys getting to thinking. Get to thinking about UFOs, because that's all I do. Just think about UFOs.
Them damn UFOs.
I'm fighting. But hope you all have a good rest of your week. Thanks for hanging out and kicking it with us. And you know the drill. Check us out at our socials. Share the show. You can watch us on YouTube if you would like a different experience. You can see our lovely faces here and talking about weird stuff. On that note, stay safe, stay weird. And if you see a UFO and there's people talking, it's probably still aliens, but it might be the government.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.